About it. There we go. And I do believe we are live.
Good stuff. Hello, I'm Simon Mercer. This is Crave, the podcast dedicated to film, music, theatre, television, anything that's been entertaining Steve McCabe and I lately. And this week, Steve and I joined much of the world in catching the new Star Wars film, The Force Awakens.
And when I wasn't seeing that, I went to see the new Will Ferrell.
I thought it was Ferrell, but that sounds like Ferrell, doesn't it?
I don't know. Well, he's in it, anyway. Whoever he is, he's in Daddy's Home.
Yes. Leave that one to you.
Thank you.
A big, big week for music. I'm looking forward to what Steve has to say about Ed Sheeran, pretty much by himself, as I understand it, at Auckland's Mount Smart Stadium.
But the both of us went to see AC/DC a couple of nights later at Western Springs.
Yes, I managed to stay for the whole event. Lots to say about that. But Steve, let's start with the film that many have been waiting for with fever pitch anticipation. This is Star Wars.
I thought you meant Daddy's Home.
Oh yes, that was top of my list. How could I miss that? No, I think we're talking about Star Wars, The Force Awakens.
Yes.
A new director, J.J. Abrams. Mm-hmm. Many familiar faces returning, but you've got these new faces as well. Lots to digest. Basically, did you enjoy the ride, Steve?
I think I did.
You think you did?
I think I did.
That sounds rather qualified.
We're approaching damning with faint praise. Well, put it this way. Is it possible for any film to live up to the hype and the expectation that preceded The Force Awakens?
Okay, the answer to that question is no. But part two of the answer to that question is, what were your expectations? And my expectation was I'd almost ignored the three prequels.
Wisely. The ones that,
yes. So, and the first set of films is a long, long time ago in a galaxy far away in my memory.
You had
now.
To do that, didn't you? There's no way you could not do that.
No. So, actually, I didn't. I mean, I know that everyone was massively looking forward to it, but personally, I wasn't quite sure how good it was going to be. And I thought this was really good. I thought the tone was good. I thought it had a lot of action, some humor that was often actually funny. It wasn't too hokey, which is always one of the things for me that never really worked with Star Wars. I thought the visuals were, by and large, pretty damn good, pretty grand, pretty epic. We knew we were back in that galaxy. The story is something I guess we might have a bit to digest here. Gets a bit convoluted. I don't know what you thought, Steve. But
well, here's the challenge. Obviously, we can't do spoilers, but the challenge is going to be, tell me the story. What's the plot?
Okay, let's tackle that. So, that's actually quite hard.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. So we start off with meeting two new people. We know that what was the Empire is called something different, and facing now what's called the Resistance. We meet a couple of young characters who somehow fit into this, and they draw us into a story where we're reacquainted. We can say this, we were reacquainted with Han Solo, and that draws us back into the epic battle between good and evil, and some interesting and surprising twists about connections between characters.
Mm-hmm.
But effectively, it's still the Empire versus the Resistance. And we've got the question of what's happened to Luke Skywalker since we last saw him, and the search for him. Kind of like the search for Mr. Spock in Star Trek. Anyway, that's not a very good summary of the plot, but I guess that listening to that tells you it's kind of hard to summarize it.
Yeah, exactly. This is a mood piece, and it's a character piece more than it's a story arc, isn't it?
And yeah, it's a bridge. Yeah, a bridge between what was happening before and setting up something to come. Yep.
Right, and there you go. Right there, you've just nailed the big problem with it. It's setting something up. The very, very first film, if you remember, as you say, a long, long time ago, in cinemas far, far away, A New Hope, as we now have to refer to it apparently, was a standalone film. You saw that film. Most people who saw it didn't even realize that it was part of some enormous mythology that George Lucas was contriving. People saw it and went, that was a good film. And they walked away from it thinking they'd seen something coherent and of a whole.
Yes.
What we saw has got so many, I wonder where they're going to go with that, moments. There's one huge one in particular that obviously we can't talk about.
Yes.
But let's talk for a second about the main character, Rey.
Yeah.
Who I thought was by far the stronger of the two new characters in terms of, first of all, the character herself and the acting. I was less impressed with Finn.
Okay.
But we're told some very, very interesting things about her. Her character has a few very, very significant revelations. But they are facts about her character that have no context, no backstory, no explanation of how these things come to be true. And we assume that they will be revealed in a further sequel. But
yes.
I found that to be hideously unsatisfying. I wanted to see a film, not an installment.
Oh, well, yeah, but hold on. This is the seventh chapter of this whole sprawling saga.
I know, but
so
I guess I
was going to say, I expected only to get a chapter here. Ah. I wasn't expecting to get a whole film. I thought, you've got to somehow, Mr. Storyteller, connect me to what happened before, make it a little fresher with a new storyline, and I'm sure, I can't remember, Steve, I'm sure there's been some talk about this being the first of three, isn't it?
Yes, that's
right?
Correct, yes.
So I'm kind of thinking you're not going to tie this up in a neat bow at the end of this film. I'm not quite like where you are on that. I wasn't so worried that I didn't get to know all about Rey. I'm expecting for more of that to come. But I do think that, so it left a lot of things dangling. I didn't trouble me too much. I thought the story in the very middle of the film just got a little bit saggy.
Yes.
But I thought the beginning was strong, visually strong. I think Rey is a strong character. I think her partner Finn, who's not such a strong character, but he had some quite nice humorous touches, I thought.
It did pick up
at the end.
There was, to be fair, a lot more humour and a lot more levity in this one than certainly in the second three.
Yes.
Which were just an abomination. They had no business being made. It's telling, isn't it? I mean, this is George Lucas's baby, and yet it's only really come back to life when it's been taken out of his hands.
Oh, I think absolutely. I mean, totally. I didn't see, although it's called a Lucasfilm production,
yeah,
I didn't sit through all of the credits at the end, but I don't know what actual hands-on role he had, if any, in this film.
Obviously, there will have been creative input. I think we can safely assume that. But they're saying that it's based on characters created by, as opposed to, very specifically, this is a George Lucas film. It's astonishing that he can't be trusted with his own characters.
Yeah. Anyone who came up with a character called Jar Jar Binks, I'm glad he wasn't involved.
Has anyone actually stopped to ask what the JJ of JJ Abrams stands for, incidentally?
Not that I've heard.
Couldn't be Jar Jar, could it, by any chance?
No, please, no. Hey, Steve, we should just quickly mention the return of some of the great names from the first set of films, Han Solo and Princess Leia. How did you think Harrison Ford went?
The moment he walked onto the stage, I was about to say, the moment he appeared on screen, there was a cheer in the cinema.
Yeah, likewise.
And I was not really engaging as much as I should with our two new characters. I wanted to engage with them. I wanted to like them so much more. But suddenly, once Han, as he's now being called apparently, Han Solo.
Han Solo.
I can't stand the pronunciation of that. But as soon as Han Solo walks on the screen, that's it. You're going, okay, we're back. We're safe here. We're home. And suddenly everything felt so much better. It's like a pro walks on and says, right, okay, kids, amateurs, here's how you do it. And the man just oozes effortless charisma. I hate him for it. He's effortless with it. He doesn't even try very hard.
No, and he's there.
His very presence. I know there was meant to be some kind of spark of chemistry between Finn and Rey. And they were trying so hard to pull it off. You could tell they were trying. But the moment you have Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher on screen together, you just think, yeah, that's how you do it. That's yeah. how it works. And they were effortless together, those two. I thought it was brilliant.
It was good. And actually, I was slightly surprised because I sort of assumed that the amount of time that would be devoted to Han Solo and Princess Leia would be relatively small in the film. But actually, Harrison Ford was pretty much, well, he was the star of the show, really, wasn't he?
No question.
Yeah, I mean, so he had a bigger part to play than I had previously anticipated.
Yes.
But no, I thought he was great. I thought he was absolutely great. You go see the film just to see him do what he did. And we won't say much about how much we see of Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker, but it is crucial to the story.
It is. And that's say cool. that. That's presumably where episodes 8 and 9 are going to head. I mean, in some ways, the comment I came up with, and I've posted this on Twitter and got a lot of positive feedback, so I'll try it on you. I felt it was like your favourite band from the 70s have reformed. And,
that's good. Yep.
And they want to play the stuff from their new album. And while they're doing that, you tolerate it, but you really start cheering when they start playing the old hits.
Yeah.
And a lot, and I'm not just talking about the actors here, a lot of the old hits showed up.
Yes. Oh, now, okay, I agree with that, but here's the thing. They did, some of those big hits included R2-D2 and C-3PO.
Yeah.
I was happy not to see so much of them, personally.
Yeah.
To me, that's the hokey side of Star Wars that I'm happy not to have too much of. But there may be others who'll disagree with that. But
now, C-3PO,
it's my taste.
C-3PO is a bit twee.
That's a word. Yeah.
Small doses, you can live with it, right?
Yeah,
But do we want a spin-off film about C-3PO?
No, please, I don't think we don't.
No, I mean, they didn't pull it off with the Ewoks. Now, the other thing that we need to talk about is the new villain.
We do. We won't say the particular connection he has with characters, shall we? Should we leave that as a...
Oh, that would be an unforgivable...
Yes, well, we'll leave that part out. We are talking about the actor called Adam Driver, and he plays this younger bad guy called Kylo Ren.
Yes.
Now, all I would say, what you need to know about this character, he is conflicted. We can say that.
Yes.
And so I actually thought... I thought he did a reasonable job of portraying that conflict. I'm not sure if you agree with that.
No, I all I could see was Darth Vader light.
Okay.
I wanted unequivocal evil. That's what you get from James Earl Jones voicing Darth Vader. There's no doubt in your mind that this is the epitome of evil and the dark side of the Force. And it was magnificent. And Adam Driver, maybe it's because I've seen him in Girls where he's just whiny, but he did come across as being a little bit of a petulant teenager. He certainly didn't deliver his lines with anything like the majesty that a true Star Wars baddie needs.
Well, that's really interesting point there, Steve, because in this story, there is another bad guy who we only see as a holographic image, this sort of supreme... evil one,
he's got the worst name of any villain yet. Sorry, his name is Snoke.
Yes, Snoke. What is that? God anyway, and he's actually played by Andy Serkis.
Yes,
and I think I think that is a wee problem in the story because the guy you see have FaceTime with Kylo Ren.
Yeah,
he is. I mean, it's fair to say he is a conflicted character. He's not black. And the guy who's really the bad guy, you kind of don't really connect with him because he's just a holographic image. Yeah. You don't see much of him. So I think you've hit the nail on the head there. That is a little weakness in the storytelling there. That the real evil isn't quite as gripping and dark as it could be.
No, even though they definitely tried to set Kylo Ren up as space Hitler.
Yes, initially that's true. Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I mean, there's one scene in particular which is basically a space Nuremberg rally.
Yeah, isn't it? Wow.
Yes. With obviously stormtroopers who are all white.
Yes.
Space Aryans. And
No, that's true. That's that scene a little I'm tweezed, not the right word, but that seems almost old hat to go down that road again, still. But they, I guess they felt that was just something that would bring us back to the environment of the previous films, and they had to carry on with that, I guess.
And it was a nice piece of CGI. It was a lovely set piece, to
be fair.
But they definitely were Hitlering just a little
bit. Now, I was just going to say, Steve, we could be talking about this next week, but I think is there anything else you want to nail on this one?
We could go on with this forever. There's one, and again, we've got to avoid giving too much away because people want to go into this as cold as possible. I get that. That's fair enough. I think you had the similar experience when we went to see Spectre. You tried to avoid any previews, any hints. And I know a lot of people want to go into this completely cold, which is fair enough. There's one name that's been touted as going to be, as a major contributor to the film. That's Gwendolyn Christie, who plays Brienne of Tarth in Game of Thrones.
Yes.
You didn't even realise she was in it, did you?
I took it. There was one female bad guy whose face you never saw.
Right.
And I thought she seemed like a significant character.
Yeah.
And I was waiting for more to happen with her, and it didn't. And I did wonder, was she going to return later on to become a significant character? Was that her?
Yep.
She was kind of a female Darth Vader? Okay, that was her. All right, so that's interesting.
It'd be Darth Mutter, wouldn't it?
yes,
and
that's interesting. Yeah,
and here's something I can't give away details because it would if I told you too much, it would give away a huge plot point. But did you recognise Daniel Craig doing a cameo?
Get out!
I'll tell you about that after we stop recording.
I did not. Holy moly!
Me neither. I read about it in the Guardian this morning.
Oh, jeez. Okay. I have to go see the film again now.
But
okay.
He crops up in a sequence that's pivotal enough that I can't tell you.
Oh, okay. Just quickly. There was one sequence where I saw a couple of, I think, very well-known Indonesian martial arts stars.
Oh, really?
There's a film called The Raid.
Yes, I'm aware of it. I've not seen it.
They did two versions of it. And I'm sure there's a fight scene with they.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, what are they doing there? And it's quite quick, but that's interesting.
Were they members of the absurdly named Kanji Club gang?
Yes.
Where did that name... That name's just horrible. But yeah, they were on screen for what, 30, 40 seconds?
Yeah, something like that. I'm sure it's the two guys who have played protagonists in The Raid.
We should look this up on IMDb.
Yeah. Okay, so are we going to buy a ticket? Well, yes, I am going to buy a ticket. There's some reservations, but I would absolutely recommend it. A bloody rollicking adventure. Yes, you're left dangling, but I'm sufficiently enticed to go and see the second installment, wherever that comes.
Yeah, it's... I mean, you can't not see it, can you?
No. And I think you'd... You're going to enjoy most of this. You might have a few little things here and there. But anyway, so that's that. Star Wars The Force Awakens. Steve McCabe, you caught another film, a couple of actors in this who've, I guess they've been around for a while. I think would it be fair to say that neither of these guys have delivered a really huge hit? We're talking about a film called Daddy's Home.
Yes.
And a couple of actors, they're well known, but yeah, have they delivered the goods yet?
No.
Right.
There you go, we can move on to the next one now.
Give us a bit more.
Quick plot summary. And you'll be able to feel, you've not even seen this film, you'll be able to tell me what the plot is after I've given you half of it, you'll be able to tell me the other half. It's very formulaic. It's Will Ferrell is a middle-aged bloke who is a stepdad to two little kids, and he's absolutely desperate to become their real dad. He desperately wants to connect with them. And just as he's finally on the brink of making the big breakthrough and finally getting them to accept them, the real dad shows up. And that, of course, is Mark Wahlberg, who is bigger and badder and dangeroser and scarier than Will Ferrell could ever hope to be. He plays a marketing executive at a smooth jazz radio station called The Panda. I think you used to work there on your early days, actually.
Yes, right.
But so you've got this ridiculous cliche set up from the beginning. You've got the insipid, sappy stepfather, and you've got the motorbike riding, dangerous, scary, leather wearing stepdad shows up in town, and I'm not even going to bother wasting my breath. You can figure out where the hell it's going to go. It's fairly obvious. It's how you get there.
Yes.
That's going to make the film. And my big problem with it was that there's a lot of very good lines. There's a lot of very, very funny scenes, very funny episodes. There's a lot of humor in the film. The problem is that all the humor happens around the two main leads. It happens around them rather than with them. And that's kind of disappointing. You end up with...
What you mean, they're just sort of, I don't know, they're kind of sitting back a little bit in terms of getting in, their teeth into their roles, and they're just letting it all wash over them?
Pretty much. It's a fairly by-the-numbers performance from both of them. They're not remarkable. There's characters around them who are a little bit more interestingly drawn. The radio station boss, for example, is a particularly reptilian character who's a lot more fun to watch. The whole thing, I mean... Yeah, see it if you're bored. See it if you've got nothing better to do. It will make you laugh. It really will. But it kind of doesn't deserve to, really. It's better than it should be. Not as good as it could be. And frankly, it's Wahlberg and Ferrell treading water and letting other people do the heavy lifting for them.
Fair enough. Actually, you know, there's another film which I haven't seen. I don't know if you have, which I thought would not be good, but apparently the reviews say it is actually pretty damn good. I think it's made the list of some people's top films of the year. That's the latest Rocky film called Creed. Have you read anything about that?
It sounds like
it's quite good.
I've seen the trailers, and quite frankly, even if they sent me a press screening ticket, I'm not sure I'd give it my time. It is Rocky once again, and the twist this time is it's Black Rocky.
Yeah, yeah.
But we've seen this film a million times. Do we need to see it? Did it need to be made again?
Well, I totally agree. That's what I would have approached this with. I'm just kind of interested that a number of international reviewers obviously went in to see it thinking exactly that thought and come out of it saying, actually, it's not bad. Anyway, that's something. Mention that in passing.
Maybe in the interest of professional thoroughness, we'll give it a look, but I remain to be convinced.
Fair enough. Now, if you've just joined this podcast, this is Crave, Steve McCabe and Simon Mercer, our regular chat about films and TV and music and theatre. Let's move on to some music, Steve. Now, you know, the last time I was at Mount Smart Stadium in Auckland for a concert, this is well over a year ago, and I went to see Bruce Springsteen and his band. Pretty good. I went both nights. Not only were there huge crowds both times, but old Brucey brings a huge band.
Yes.
He's got a horn section. He's got backup singers. He's got four guitarists on stage, including himself. You have just been to see another pretty big name at Mount Smart, but it sounds like he's thought, well, I don't think I need a big band at all. In fact, any band is surplus to requirements. Who did you see and how did he do his show?
Well, I saw Ed Sheeran, and interestingly, he had three support acts.
Right.
And I'm thinking between the lot of them, there were probably fewer people on stage in total than there were with Bruce and the E Street Band.
Right.
It was an interesting show. I went to review more than to enjoy. I'm not a massive fan. And to be fair, I didn't walk away a massive fan, but I walked away with a bit more appreciation for what the man's got.
Okay, so how did he deliver it? I mean, how many people did he have on stage with him?
None.
It was
the man alone. I mean, he started off, he had the crowd really nicely warmed up with a long undercard. You got a bloke named Foy Vance, who's a Northern Irish bloke, who's basically a poor man's Hosier. He was okay. Played a quick set. Passenger, who I still find a little bit warbly and high-pitched, to be honest. But is a perfectly agreeable, buskery type of bloke. He played a quick set. Again, one bloke on his own in front of, I believe, 50,000 people at Mount Smart. That's not a bad effort, really, to be honest.
That's huge. Yeah, that's good.
It was packed. It really was. Rudimental, a British drum and bass band, who I don't know how they got selected to support Ed Sheeran, to be honest. They didn't fit with his type of music particularly, although they do share a songwriting credit with one song of his Bloodstream. Fair enough. And so, you know, all that went around. The crowd were ready. He came on stage, and it was just him. Nobody else. On he came. And he played a song. And I thought, okay, this is interesting. There's a lot more going on than simply one bloke and a guitar. And so at the end of the first song, he actually issued a disclaimer. He said, look, it's only me playing, but I am setting up loops as I play. I start to play, I record that, and then I loop it, and that becomes the backing track for the rest of my song. And so effectively, he would have three guitarists and two singers on stage, effectively, at a time.
Ooh. So what did people, when he said that, what was there any sort of reaction from the crowd?
Oh, he had the crowd where he wanted them.
Okay.
He had a very loyal crowd who clearly were there to see him play however he chose to play.
Right.
And it was interesting. He very definitely pushed the limits of live. He played everything that we heard. We saw him play live, but we heard it repeatedly, but we only saw it played live once.
Yes. So
I know it's a bizarre concept. It wasn't pre-recorded, but it was recorded. So it's right on the very, very cusp of what's live and what's not.
Yeah.
And it was, but the thing is, it was effective. It worked remarkably well. So, for example, he'd start off tapping the body of his acoustic guitar, sets up a nice rhythm. He then sets that on a loop, so he's now got a rhythm. He then starts chopping out a rhythm on the strings, chopping out chords. That gives a second layer of rhythm. That starts looping. And so you've now got two tracks. He'll then play a third guitar line over that. It's all him.
Yeah. And it's all taken place in front of you.
Yes.
But it's interesting. But the thing about that is, I guess, is 50,000 people, he's there to do a show. One guy standing there, even with all that intricacy of recording, it's a lot to ask of one man standing up there to engage with that many people. I mean, did he pull that off? Did he bring people in?
Yes, he did, surprisingly. I mean, one of the things that you obviously have to do is you need something for people to look at. I was up in the stands, and I could barely see the man. He was about that big in front of me. Tiny little thing. So obviously there's the great big projection screens around him, and half the time that was filled up simply with the conventional thing of his footage of what's going on stage.
Yes.
Again, one man doesn't give you enough to look at.
No.
You can do a close-up shot or you can do a wide shot, but you're still looking at the same bloke constantly. So they started playing... They'd overlay that with visual effects, so they'd play a music video or give you things to look at. Bottom line is, it's still one bloke. And so you need a very, very, very loyal audience for that. And he had
you
that.
Do.
He had an adoring audience. And after after AC/DC, which we'll talk about in a moment, I was walking back to my car with a couple of the other photographers who I shot the show with. And we got talking about things like Ed Sheeran. And we're saying, how is it that he can pack stadiums like that and still have the loyalty of his audience and doesn't attract the derision and the scorn that somebody like, say, Justin Bieber does? What's he got that makes him beloved without the same detractors that someone like Justin Bieber would attract? And the consensus is, he's a genuinely nice bloke.
I think the word genuine was going to be the one I was going to throw in. I think people perceive that, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's talented.
You can spot the bullshit usually pretty well, can't you?
Oh, yeah. And there was not a whole lot on display. The guy comes across as being a genuine and a warm and a pleasant kind of fella. He's not good looking. He's not handsome. He's not conventionally what you'd expect of a rock star. He's a schlubby ginger, but he's got presence and he's got personality and he's got good songs, to be fair.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, by the way, how long a show did he do roughly with just one guy?
About an hour and 45.
Oh, that's not bad, is it?
No, it's not bad at all. He must have been knackered by the end of it.
Yeah. I mean, I think AC/DC did about 2 hours, maybe a touch more, and there's five of them. Yep. So that's pretty good going, Mr. Sheeran.
Well, to carry a show completely by yourself, you can't back off for a second.
No, hell no.
It's all you. Yeah. Constantly. Is a hell of an achievement. He played very well. I was impressed. And the audience lapped up every second of it. There's no doubt about that. It was very, very popular. He knows how to please a crowd. He knows how to do it. So, I mean, for example, Foy Vance, his first opener, did the obligatory, I dedicate this song to John Olomou.
Yes.
Which obviously is pandering to the crowd, and you do that, and he got a big cheer for it. Of course he did. Ed Sheeran wandered out in an All Blacks jersey.
Yes.
And the first time he turned his back to the audience to hand a guitar over to his roadie and pick up another one, the camera picked up on his back, and he's got a huge big number 11 and a Olomou across it.
Yes,
and
yes.
Without saying a word, the crowd went wild. Absolutely wild. Because he knew that anyone can say a few words, but that took a bit of planning and a bit of prep. That takes a bit of thought. Just simply saying, oh yeah, John Olomou, right? Yeah, that's easy. He put some effort into it.
Yeah.
And things like that. Get the crowd on your side. And like I say, I was up in the stands. I could see the general admission area. I could see the floor. And I could tell from the hands up in the air, and I could hear the roars from the crowd. He won.
Good on him.
Yeah,
good on
definitely.
Him.
And the other thing that's worth mentioning is he kept repeating. He kept saying over and over again, this is the last date of a 4.5 year tour. This is the last date. Apparently he's gone back to England for surgery.
Oh, yes, I've read that. Yep.
So he is out of action for a while. And so he made it very clear. He said, I'm flinging everything I've got at this show. And by the end of it, his voice was getting a little bit hoarse.
Well, big ups to him then,
Very definitely. And it's worth mentioning just the way he ended the show. We talked about the whole looping business before. So at the very end of the show, he ended with a number he does called Sing, which has a nice little chant-along bit in its chorus. And he got the audience singing that, set up a loop on his guitar, and they just put the guitar down on the floor of the stage. The guitar kept on playing, and the audience sang him off the stage.
Oh!
He's good. He's very, very good. I wouldn't bother listening to his records, but I'd see him on stage again.
Well, I haven't seen him on stage. I will absolutely take your recommendation, and if he's hopefully he gets through his surgery all right and he comes back, and I'd see him this time. Thanks, Steve. That was great.
Yeah,
wow.
I enjoyed it.
Cool. Now, we mentioned AC/DC. We both went along to Western Springs this week to see at least some of that show.
Yes.
You were there for the whole show, so you were there on a particular assignment. What was your role for this, Steve?
I was the designated photographer for the evening. So we have photos from the show up on the website at cravepodcast.com. And I was very fortunate to be right down the front, in front of the security barriers. It's a great way to see a show. I got quality. But I think the quantity, they kick us out after three songs. That's dead standard. But what a three-song set it was that I saw.
Okay, so I did stay and I saw the whole thing, and I was pretty much near the front too. So I should first explain this. For me, this is a band who I've obviously grown up with. I remember them from way back in the early days. I know about their big hits. I have never actually listened to a whole album. So I'm familiar, but not intimately familiar. I would have said, oh, AC/DC, they'll deliver me a full-on, hard-out rock concert.
And I
got a full-on, hard-out rock concert.
A non-stop, heads down.
Yeah, not a hint of subtlety.
No.
No ballad thrown in from time to time to vary the pace or the mood. It's one crashing rock song after another. And if that's what you want, that's what you got. Most of the people who were almost in a uniform of black tops and blue jeans with the red lit devil's horns on their heads,
yes.
absolutely, that's what they wanted, and clearly that's what they got. And they, I think seeing them for the first time, and these guys are obviously in their late 50s, early to mid-60s.
Angus Young apparently is 60 years old.
60.
Old enough to know better.
Yeah, still there with his school uniform and tie, his shorts, doing his little shimmy across the stage. I haven't seen him live before. He's a great lead guitarist. He gets people with him, alongside him. The singer, Brian Johnson, I think he's in his 60s too, I think. He was prancing around there, cajoling people, getting them going. 68?
68.
Holy mother. Okay, he's got a lot of energy. He's got a lot of energy. So I think that they delivered all that. And the people who were there were mostly a white audience.
Yep.
All sorts of ages, Steve. Yep. I saw young kids. I saw people in their 60s. I saw families. I saw parents bringing their kids.
Oh, yeah.
And quite a multicultural audience. I mean, mostly white, but around me, I saw there were a couple of guys speaking German. There were some French speakers at the back of me. Quite a lot of Asian faces around me. So it was, kind of an interesting slice of modern Auckland, I guess.
Right.
But I guess I'm sort of used to a live show with a bit more texture to it.
Yes.
So in that sense, I wasn't completely satisfied. I would have liked a bit of variation. I guess for the songs that I wasn't so immediately familiar with, I started to see the sameness and the structure of them. I could, you could pick the beginning. You could pick when Angus was going to deliver his guitar solo. Having said that, I didn't feel as if they were just going through the motions. It
No.
felt like these guys enjoyed what they were doing, or at least the two lead guys did, because we hardly saw anything of the rhythm trio. The rhythm guitarist, bass guitarist, and drummer were way back in the set on stage. But so I think I wasn't surprised. Not entirely my cup of tea. I don't know if you were there long enough, Steve, to see any of the big props they used.
No, I didn't see the bell. I didn't see the blow-up doll. I didn't see the cannon. But to be fair, I've seen it all before. I first saw AC/DC 30 years ago next month.
Wow.
At the Manchester Apollo.
Clearly you were only about 7 or 8 at that time.
That's the one. Thank you, Simon. That's the nicest thing anyone said to me all day.
Yes.
But I saw them at the Apollo. It was about 2,500-seater venue compared to, I think, about 35,000 at Western Springs the other night. And I saw the same show.
Right.
Even the set list was about 50-60% the same.
Yeah.
They're playing the same songs. It's the same shtick. It's Angus in his school uniform. Although I have to be honest, at 60, he's slowing down. He's not as frenetic as he was when he was 30 when I saw him the first time.
Okay.
You couldn't be. There's no way you could sustain that.
No.
But it's the same show. You've still got... Okay, you've got different people in the back line. You've got Stevie Young instead of Malcolm, who is now... sadly retired with, I believe, dementia from a stroke. He's out of action now, which is understandable. I mean, the man's getting on in years, but his nephew Stevie is now playing his role, and it's seamless. You don't notice a transition.
This
guy's obviously grown up with AC/DC in his blood, and so he stepped into his uncle's role on the back line, taking the rhythm guitar quite effortlessly. You've got Chris Slade on drums, because obviously it's probably kinder if we don't talk about what's up with Phil Rudd these days. The Bay of Plenty Constabulary have had a few words to say about whether or not he gets to play again. And so basically, even though you've got different people filling those roles, it's the same show.
Yeah.
There's no variation. There's no subtlety. You know exactly what you're going for. You know it's going to be heads down, pounding into the wall, rock and roll. It's going to be no subtlety. Angus is going to take his clothes off halfway through during a ridiculously overblown solo. Did he bare his bum?
No.
Oh, something new, something different.
No, I missed it.
Well, I suppose it's a mercy, really, isn't it?
Yes.
But that's it. That's what you get in an AC/DC show. Now, I didn't really get to listen as closely as I would have liked, because I was taking photographs, but I was paying attention. I was singing along during Shoot the Thrill. I was having fun. And certainly as the show was over, as we were walking away, we actually got to listen to things like Back in Black.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced they're as tight as they used to be.
Okay.
And that's a function of their age. Like I say, Brian Johnson's 68. The man can mince and prance like nobody's business.
He does indeed.
He's still got it. But yeah, I don't know. I'm really glad we went to see that one. I'm very glad I was there. I'm glad you enjoyed it too. But I can't help but wonder, maybe it's time. I mean, I've heard people say they're basically now the Rolling Stones of heavy metal.
Yes, I saw that line. Actually, not having seen them before, I can't compare how previous crowds took to them.
Yeah.
And although generally, as I looked around me, people were into it, and generally when they did some sweeping camera shots over the audience, you saw hands raised and people obviously into what there was in front of them. But, you know, the little pocket of people I happened to be standing in, they were relatively quiet. Now, that might be just because they were quiet appreciators of AC/DC, although that seems rather incongruous.
Somewhat oxymoronic, really, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. But, yeah, there was maybe just a hint of we've seen all this before. Actually, when you compare the enthusiasm to the performance given by Sheehad,
yes,
who were fantastic. John Tugard just was a man possessed with enthusiasm. What a front man. He's a force of nature and an infectious sort of a way.
Yeah.
I thought he was great. A really great act to set up the main performance. Really good.
Yes, they were actually quite remarkable. I, as you've mentioned to me previously, I've not seen them before. But
yeah.
But they're part of the... They're a fixture in the what's the word I'm looking for? There's a word I'm looking for that's going to be really, really profound, and I can't think of it for the life.
Oh, no. I'll wait for profundity.
A fixture in the firmament, there you go, of New Zealand rock. I mean, they've been around for...
For a few decades now.
30-odd years, I believe it is. Yeah. I mean, they're a thing. They're a very well-established thing. But you could tell John Tugard was having the time of his life. He was supporting AC/DC, and this was what he'd been working to his entire musical career. And he was loving every second of it. And
it was great.
And he conveyed that very clearly to the audience. I don't know that AC/DC quite have that same... I mean, they're 20 years older, let's say, but I don't know that they convey the same level of enthusiasm for what they do. I don't think it shines through to the audience in quite the same way, which is a shame.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that, yes. In a strange sort of a way, John Tugard and Sheehad actually set the bar really high. And,
they did.
And because AC/DC had been doing this for so long, it was quite hard for them to reach that. Anyway, we're being a little bit picky, but because I wasn't a big fan beforehand, I guess I brought a slightly more critical eye to it. I'm really pleased I went. I've ticked that one off. Wow, AC/DC.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't probably see them again, I don't think.
No, I think they're passing, if not passed, but they're certainly on the way to be passing their prime. But a good night out, though.
Thanks. Absolutely, absolutely. Pretty much our last, not pretty much, it is our last episode of Crave for this year, Steve.
Yeah, I don't think we can quite pull off a New Year's Day special, can we?
No. We'll save that for another time.
That might not be pretty. So I think we need to wrap this one up for the year.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed it too.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what a year it's been. We have seen everybody from... Ooh. We started out with Johnny Marr was our very first, if you remember.
Yeah, that's still a highlight for me. Actually, I thought he was excellent, Johnny Marr from the Smiths.
Yes, that was a cracking show. That was. We've seen Hozier together. That was a new one for you, I believe.
It was, and that's also a highlight. I was really impressed with him. I went out and bought the album as a result of watching him live.
And what do you make of it?
Oh, good, very good.
It's quite
very
excellent,
good.
Isn't it?
Yeah, I would, and I'd see him again. I'd recommend anyone to go and see him.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Definitely.
And we who else? We saw Avalanche City a few weeks ago.
Yes, yeah. Which pretty good. I enjoyed seeing. I'm glad we got to see some New Zealand stuff. It's not all just big acts visiting.
Yeah.
Saw Jin Wigmore and Tammy Nielsen at the Auckland Town Hall recently. I think it's quite nice that we can touch base with some of the local scene, as well as reflecting on some of the big names. I'm looking forward, it's a couple of months into next year, Steve, but a name that's been around the local scene for a guy that's country blues singer called Marlon Williams has got a tour coming up around the country towards the end of the summer. I just bought his album, actually, just to have a listen to it. He's got a fantastic voice. I will definitely do my very best to catch him next year, 2016. So there'll be lots for us to talk about over the summer and get our teeth into next year.
And in the meantime, let's just wrap up with one quick question.
What's
been our film of the year?
We've seen
some crackers. We've seen what's a polite word for this?
Gosh, okay, you put me on the spot because I hadn't reflected back on all the films I've seen. So some of the more recent ones include films like Youth, Spectre, the Star Wars film, of course. We saw what else have we seen in the last little while? He says racking his brains. Help me out here, Steve. Some of the big ones we've seen.
We saw Crimson Peak. Did I see? Yeah, I saw that.
Yes.
One. You didn't see that one.
Yes, yeah. I did see Crimson Peak.
I'm pulling down my invites off my shelf here. let's see. We've got things like, you saw Everest, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Yeah, which I thought was pretty good. Yeah.
There was The Dressmaker was another high point, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, The Martian we saw.
We did indeed, yeah. You dodged the bullet and didn't come and see Straight Outta Compton with me.
No, I didn't.
No. You'll go and see Star Wars, but you won't go and see the rubbish.
I don't know. I think that I'd actually struggle to think of the absolute best one. There's a group I enjoyed. It's interesting what happens. We talked about this the other day with music, Steve. Sometimes you can be caught up in the moment of seeing something for the first time, and then as time passes, you digest it a little bit more. And it settles to a particular place in your consciousness wherever it comes to its natural resting place. So, for example, I really, really enjoyed Spectre when I saw it.
Yeah.
Over time, I think it's slightly just settled in a slightly downwards position. I think I'm not sure why that is, but I still very much enjoyed it. But I know you thought Skyfall didn't quite do the business for you, and Spectre did better. I might flip those around the other way for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now that's all. Obviously, all the foregoing there was the high class waffling of an experienced broadcast journalist. But you didn't actually answer the question.
Answer the question.
Film of the year.
I've been interviewing too many politicians in my career. I'm struggling to think of the film of the year off the top of my head here, Steve. I'm crossing the things off and seeing what I end up with.
I should. It was unfair of me. It was unkind of me to spring that one on.
That's okay. Do you have one?
I think I'd have to go with Spectre, to be honest.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting. I sort of think of things that move you in an emotional way, and sometimes that happens right when you're seeing it, and sometimes it dissipates.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to reflect on that. I'll put a posting. Should I do a posting on the
I think we should
on the website and say on further reflection, Simon says.
I think we should both do that.
Yes.
Our films of the year.
Yes. No, that's a good idea. So we will be back in 2016.
We will indeed.
But thanks for listening to us. Hope you've enjoyed our rambling musings on all matters of entertainment that come across our bowels. We've enjoyed it very much. If you want to get in touch, you can email us at podcast@cravepodcast.com.
You can find us on Facebook, or you can track us down on Twitter at Crave Podcast.
So, I'm Simon Merced.
I'm Steve McCabe.
And that's what's been entertaining us in 2015.
Merry Christmas, Simon.
And to you, Steve. All the best.